Hey, JB here, the Wolf of Wall Street in the Wolf's Den. Time for another awesome podcast. Have a great guest today, expert marketer, online and offline, but known for online marketing, Eric Sue. Very, very smart guy. Partners with a very good friend of mine, Neil Patel, another brilliant marketer out there. They have a great podcast called Marketing School, which is one of the top podcasts out there right now in the business world. We talk about all things marketing and the relationship with sales. Before we go, though, a couple of quick words here. One of the things we do talk about is COVID-19 and how do you make the most of it right now. And the one common theme that we both agreed on is that the people who are, I wouldn't say, let's say, taking advantage of, it's probably the wrong word, but everybody that is doing anything now that involves forward motion is somehow incorporating the reality of what's going on into their marketing, into their presentations, into their offers, into the things they're doing. It's a reality now that we all have to take into account. So when I'm thinking about my sales scripts I'm writing and the presentations I'm making, I'm actually looking when I can to gear offers around like, hey, in response to COVID-19, we're offering a special payment program or X number of months for free, or in response to COVID-19, flexible repayment terms, or, you know, a flexible start date, blah, blah, blah. So I really want you to think about the reality that is COVID-19 in the sense that it's not about stopping or slowing down, but actually using it as a springboard to be more creative with your offers and your marketing. I think when you start looking at things that way and you start looking to incorporate it into the reality of the fabric of what you do for a living, you can actually use this to make even more money, to bring value to more people, and to solve a problem that is really, at the end of the day, mostly just about fear of the unknown. And so much of what we do when we sell and we market is helping people feel okay about the future. That it's a bright future ahead, that you're relieving some sort of pain point, you're scratching some itch. And this is a serious itch that needs to be scratched by pretty much everyone who's considering doing business with you in any shape or form. So with that, let's keep it short today and let's cut to Eric Sue. But first, got a quick word from an awesome sponsor. I think you probably know who they are, but let's hear from them right now. All right, here's the deal. 2020 has been a gut punch to American business, no doubt about that. But if you're gonna succeed, you gotta have the right strategy and you need an edge. With NetSuite, you can make that happen. The bottom line is that smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle. This is the world's number one cloud-based business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, your HR, your inventory, e-commerce, and everything else you need all in one spot. And let me just tell you something. If you're not on top of your numbers, then your numbers are going to be on top of you. Whether you're doing $100 million a year, hundreds of millions a year, $1 million a year, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. Bottom line, you'll have the ability to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. You want to join 20,000 companies, 20,000, who trust NetSuite to make that happen. Listen, NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using right now as America reopens for business. You need to watch this, you need to see this. So receive your free guide. It's called 7 Action Businesses Need to Take Now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/wolf. That's netsuite.com/wolf. Listen, you know I don't endorse a lot of companies, right? This is one I believe in. You want to check this out. Listen, Larry Ellison, Oracle, business genius, NetSuite, best of breed software by a country mile. So if you're in business and you don't at least check out these seven strategies that you need to take right now, actions, come on. What's the worst that could happen? At least go check this out. See what the smartest business people in the world are doing right now to maximize this rocket ship up we're about to witness after coronavirus. You need to check this out. So again, one more time, netsuite.com/wolf. That's netsuite.com/wolf. You want to do this right now. All right. So Eric Hsu, man, myth, legend, marketer extraordinaire. I think one thing we have to start with here is the distinction in your mind between sales and marketing and how they work together to allow someone to monetize something that has value, right?
Yep. So I think marketing is, simple definition for me is bringing people to the point of sale. Right? So you're handing the ball off at that point, you're handing the baton off, and then it's up to sales at that point to bring the deal home. I think they one can't exist without the other. And you're a good example of what you've been doing with marketing right now. You're bringing people, you're building an audience, right? And you're bringing people to the point of sale, to whatever it is you offer.
So I think one of the mistakes or the confusion people have out there is that they confuse like that a tripwire offer might result in a sale, but to really get the most, let's say, money and value delivered to someone, typically there's some sort of cap in what you get directly with the funnel. So in other words, while a funnel can still sell things, the really big winners in the game are taking those clients and then really amplifying the value over the life of the client mm-hmm. by either using telephone or Zoom or in the olden days before COVID in person, right?
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
So I think, look, I talk about nerd out on marketing every single day. And I think what I've learned over the years, starting with internet marketing first, is that the people that just focus on making money initially, the affiliate marketers, the internet marketers, they're focused on the funnel. Let's make all these optimizations. But then what you don't think about there is how do you drive the ultimate customer experience? And that's how you retain people for the long term. That's how you can upsell people to these much bigger deals than selling this $10 ebook or this $100 course or whatever. You can go much bigger than that. So I think that's what a lot of people are missing. It's the long-term type of thinking.
When you're going out there and doing your marketing, what's the first thing that you do? Do you like, so every company is obviously has its own best strategy, but like in terms of like identifying like who the buyer is, like do you have a system that you use to find like, okay, we're speaking to one person or do you think we're speaking to a group of people? How do you do it in your own, where do you start from?
Yeah, I think the way my podcast co-host and I, Neil, the way we do our marketing in general.
Neil Patel, right?
Neil Patel.
Well, I love, yeah. Great, brilliant guy.
Yeah, so we do a podcast called Marketing School. And the way we, for better or worse, the way we do it, and a lot of people make fun of us, by the way, it's we just like to teach. And we play the long game. We try to teach. We don't try to monetize quickly. And we hit a lot of people. And what ends up happening is like, you know, we'll have the big clients, the Fortune 500s, all these household names that you know, inevitably, they will reach out to us. One guy will message me on Instagram. One guy will just straight up, he'll find my number and he'll call me and say, hey, I binged all your stuff. You have super, you know, high tier clients like that. But then you also have the vast majority of our customers are, you know, people that are learning, they're beginners. But then you learn later, you survey these people once you build your email list and then you figure out, hey, like, what do you need exactly? How can I serve you? And then you build around that. So I think what you're seeing a lot, you know, a lot of people are talking, like people in Silicon Valley are like, oh yeah, you know, it's about this passion economy now. You got to build the audience first and then everything else will come to you. Like I agree with that, but it's nothing new. It's you build the audience first, everything just becomes a lot easier. And there's a big reason why you're doing that right now too.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, with me, it's like I've always tried to monetize things at least enough to create cash flow that I'm not, you know, having to constantly dip in my pockets. One of the things I've learned as a business person is that, you know, time is on your side when you're not burning through a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if you're burning through vast amounts of money, you start like, sometimes because it takes time to find the truth of something, the best way of doing something, the best copy, the best audience, the best offer to make that audience. And sometimes I think people, they are not aware of the fact that it's an emotional toll that a cash burn takes on you. Because most people can't play the Silicon Valley unlimited deep pockets and I'll just figure it out by brute forcing it. Mm-hmm. So you have to be aware that, like, you know, while you're going out and trying to build that audience, you're the average person, you need to make sure you don't go too deeply into the hole because you're going to get discouraged and probably quit, which is probably why a lot of people do quit when they could have really figured out. What do you think about that?
I think there's a really important concept here. There's a guy, who did I get this from? So he started an agency, and agency kicks out, let's say, 20, 30 million bucks a year in profit, which is great. And he reinvests all the profit and he buys all these other businesses. He invests in all these other businesses. Now, the key thing here is that, you know, whether you decide to do consulting, whether you decide to do drop shipping or whatever, that's the first business you start. That's your launch pad business. That's the foundation. So you get that, you know, you make 100, 200 grand a year just to cover your own expenses. Initially, you're starting out, then you're good to go. Then you can afford to take shots on this other stuff. And then you can play the long game. You don't need to have all this, you know, you're like hustling all the time and you're just trying to make the next quick buck, but you can take things slowly. And to your point, here's the key thing. You said you're a business person. You didn't say you're an entrepreneur. A business person is different than an entrepreneur. So
what you're saying is that when you're coming up with your marketing strategy, you want to sort of take into account, okay, here's my tolerance for acceptable losses while I'm figuring things out. So for the average person, what do you think that the best way to go about? Let's try to get really granular right?
I'll share a story. I mean, you know, sometimes it's pure, let's call it being naive or being an idiot. So let's use me as an example. So like, let's see, my first podcast, while I was trying to, I bought this business and it was a failing business. I was trying to save the business and I was doing this podcast at the same time. So this was 8 years ago or so. And so what ended up happening, first year goes by, podcast, I was spending about 6 hours a week on it. I was getting 9 downloads a day after the first year. Probably should give up, right? Second year, keep going, 6 hours a week again, 30 downloads a day. While this company's on fire, we drop all the way down to one employee, just things are blowing up, right? But, you know, things turn around, things start to compound, you stick with it, they start to grow, right? And it's just like, that's the key thing, what I've learned with marketing, more so content marketing, whether it's, you know, building, you want to build a YouTube, you want to build an Instagram, whatever you want to build a podcast. It just takes time to compound. It's just like investing, right? You're an investor. So you look, Warren Buffett, he didn't make 96%, 98% of his wealth till after he was 50. Right. So man, you just get older, you get wiser. And it's just like, yeah, you know, just take your time and just, you know, just focus on the right things too. Because if I only focused on the downloads, I should have given up. But I was learning so much from these other people, from these conversations, that by default put me into a long-term type of mindset, and boom, it just continued to grow, which led to this other podcast, and I still have both podcasts today.
How many people do you think make that mistake when they're first starting out of, you know, thinking that it's just like, I'm going to just hit it right away? Like, to me, the interesting thing about funnels is that one little change can make such a difference. It almost doesn't make sense sometimes. I'll give you an example of my own business. We were just testing something out, as simple as trying to get people to submit videos off of a call to action, right? And we tested small, like 100 some odd people, and not one single person downloaded, like actually entered their video, put it, you know, taped it and entered their video into the into the landing page, right?
Yeah.
So we're like, that's really interesting. We said, let's just try this. Just fill out this form. And then one of our people, our recruits, we're in a recruiting business, right? Yep. One of our recruits will send them just a form text. Hey, buddy, great to hear from you. Do me a favor, please just download this video. And as soon as it's done, we'll give you a call back. 60% took their videos
in. Little things, yeah.
Like a little thing like that, right? And I've seen that again and again and again.
Yep.
Like for another example, you've done those things. These are really good things to point out for everybody. These are real world examples. I had another funnel I was running where I had a monthly payment plan and an annual. And I was trying to get more people to take the annual, the one pay, right? Why more cash flow up front, right?
Yeah.
And I tried all these different things. But what I did, it always 75-25 in favor of the monthly. I tried, you know, raising up the monthly, the annual, 5%, 10%. And whatever I did, it was like this incremental change. I could not get it to really flip, which I think is a common occurrence for many people. So what finally, I had this little brainstorm. I said, wait a second. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to offer a quarterly payment program as a pop-up. So let's say I have these two things in it. Like it says, like, monthly here, $20, you know, best deal, stars, highlights, flash. One payment, $97, right? Yeah. How, you know, 60% of whatever it was, right? The time keeps going more. Who wins it, right? 25% take it, 70% go for the monthly, right?
Yep.
So if you click on the monthly, pop, oh, wait, we also offer a quarterly. So listen, this is the interesting thing here. Quarterly of like $29.99, whatever, it's like in the middle of somewhere. Guess what happened? They would go back to the next, to the pre, it would then say, okay, they click on it and go back to the next. No one did the quarterly, but now 75% did the annual.
I would never have guessed that. There's no way.
Would you, but like these, and it made a massive impact on my business.
Yeah.
So I think that what you, how do you like, do you prescribe sort of a methodology where people make sort of these tweaks? How do you do that in a systemic way?
So we, the stuff you're talking about, we're always tweaking. So for example, for our ads, we do have a education program that we drive people to, let's say 10, 15 grand plus, right? So for us there, we're meeting every day, we're doing a stand-up meeting, and you know, we're talking about the tweaks we're making, we're looking at the numbers, and you know, it's, we'll find every once in a while, we'll find something that strikes gold. I think about 10 to 12% of the time your tests are going to be successful. But what I've learned over the years, instead of having all this kind of schizophrenia about like testing all these little things, is you know, the framework we've created is more around content. It all starts from content. If I look at every single thing that's grown, it all comes from content first, right? So
give me an example.
So let's say the podcast Marketing School. So now we're doing decent. It's got about 40 million downloads so far. But we start with that first because it's so easy to record content like this. But from that piece of content, that's the seed piece of content. We will say, okay, this video or this podcast, right? We can chop this up into 10 different pieces. Okay. Not only that, we'll put this on writers too. So we'll sprout it into 10 different pieces, but we'll also sprout it into a couple of other blog posts, because this conversation right here is about 50 to 60% of a blog post. And we just have them write long form content. Then from there, we have it go to our social team and they chop it up into little pieces. Then I can repurpose stuff onto IGTV, LinkedIn, whatever.
Yeah.
And all we're looking for is little touch points, right? And then the more reach you have, the better. And after that, it's like, okay, what do you want to do? How are you going to promote it? Put some money towards it. We put some money towards some old post that we had. What happens? Boom. Large stock exchange company comes to us and says, hey, we want this, right? And then that leads to, we're spending like nothing a day, like $10 to $50 a day. But it all starts from this one foundational piece first, and then it just goes up from there. And you guys, I believe you guys are doing the same thing right now too. The people that are doing it well, they're just using some form that's like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So give me an example of some of the things, like tell me your top five tweaks for someone that's entering the world of marketing. What are the five things that you think these just are like the must do's? Like what are the things you want to like
to become a great marketer?
Split text. Yeah. What are like the five best, like obvious ones that if you're not doing it, you're just missing the boat.
So you're talking tactics.
Tactics, yeah.
Yeah. So I think a couple things. I think what a lot of people miss out on is, what's funny is in this world, everyone talks about ads. Everyone talks about social media. Nobody talks about SEO. But that's such, like the fact that people are avoiding it means you still have an opportunity there. So I think one thing is around SEO.
Interesting.
So let's say you create a ton of social content. You have a lot of videos. You have a lot of concepts too, and from your training programs and everything. What's to say you can't have a lot of it out there for free in long form format, and then people will find it. The algorithms will find it, people, and then you'll get the traffic from it. And then from there, okay, from the SEO, right? You're writing long form content. A lot of people miss out on the fact that if you have a lot of traffic come to your website, you have a lot of data, right? And what does that mean exactly? That means I can enrich data, IP addresses visiting my website. So let me know if I'm getting too far in the weeds here.
Not at all.
So if they're coming to my website, if I see like Coca-Cola's IP address or NASDAQ or whatever, I can enrich those IP addresses and then I can automatically dump them into a sales sequence and start reaching out to them. So I don't even need a sales team at this point. If it's a smaller company and I just use a tool like this is called the customer data platform, a lot of people, they don't know how to combine these things. If I get a lot of SEO traffic coming to my website or just a lot of traffic in general, I can use a CDP, a customer data platform, that will have all my data sources talk together, and boom, guess what? All of a sudden I have a sales machine. I'm personalizing things without having to add a lot of overhead.
Right, and that's SEO. It doesn't cost you money, so to speak. Well, it costs you money on the content.
Costs you money. It's still investing.
Right,
still investing.
But it's not like you're not paying for it. What would you say in terms of like the blend of traffic that you would think a really well-run, you know, fully integrated marketing machine would have versus paid traffic, like from social ads versus SEO, like organic traffic?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably it depends on the industry, but I think if you look at a stock portfolio to make it more just generic, I think you probably want to do a third, a third, a third. So maybe a third from paid, a third from social, a third from SEO. So if one gets burnt down, you still have the other stools to stand on.
Right. And how many people do you think are actually doing that? Or is that just a completely, do you think most people just like, yeah, this thing, Facebook ads? Like, it's like,
yeah, look, everybody that's selling courses, let's just use the course marketers as an example. Facebook ads, Instagram ads, drive them to a webinar. That's it. It works. And even if you're 21 years, by the way, I admire these people that are 21 years old. Buy my coaching course. I'm going to coach you on life. Like, great. You found out a way to make it work. Now go do something for the long term and you're going to do great.
So what do you think? Let's talk. We have to talk about that, obviously. So what do you think about this, you know, phenomenon that's developed where, you know, people that really have no business being positioned as experts are positioning themselves as experts and selling, you know, get rich quick schemes. Like ones that, listen, I think there's this very two very different things. Mm-hmm. And this is where Neil and I are very much alike. In a sense, I don't sell business opportunities.
Yeah.
I just sell training. Like, like my stuff is like, I never ever sold a biz op. I always knew if I did, I'd add a zero onto my income.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you turn into a biz op, people will pay 10 times more for it. They will, they will, but I never did it. All I said is like, I don't care what business you're in, you need to learn this to enhance your business, a skill set, right? Yeah. But yet there's these biz ops out there. They make the people a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I don't think they often make the people who buy them a lot of money.
No.
You know, what are your thoughts on, you know, I guess, I don't know about the ethics, it was a separate issue, but like, you know, and what should people do that are listening to this to either protect themselves? How do they know who's real, who's not?
That's a great question. I think it comes down to what I said earlier. I think in the early days when I was 20, 21 years old, I'm just like, how do I make a lot of money? Like, okay, Asian family, right? It's like, you know, you got to be a doctor, engineer. You got to make 100 grand. So the 100 grand's the number, right? And then you realize 100 grand is really not enough. And then so, you know, I think it's really my message to my 21-year-old self would be, look, slow down. Don't think you need to be making, you know, a couple hundred grand or $1 million out the gate. I think if you can prove that you can make these types of funnels work, you've proven to yourself that you at least know how to make things work. Now take those types of tactics and strategies and apply it to something long-term so you can make a bigger impact on the world. Let's say you want to train people. That's actually impacting people's lives instead of, you know, pilfering their money and then feeling and then posting pictures of you with a Lamborghini or whatever. Because that doesn't make people feel good. That causes resentment. And that doesn't, you got
it. It's more, not sustainable.
Exactly. The more impact you make on the world, you're going to get whatever money you're like, you'll be fine. Like, just focus on impact.
Do you think there's something that's just like an obvious tell for these people who do that? Like, if someone's watching, say, if you see them saying X, don't, like, probably you should either investigate it a lot more closely or just run the other way. Is there like that obvious telltale? I know one I see, but what's yours?
I'm curious to get your thoughts. I mean, the tell I see is always, everyone's copying each other with the same ads, and they're doing a house tour. They're showing like a car. It's like, look at me, I got this. And if you do what I do, you can get this too. And that makes everybody look bad. But I'm curious, what's yours?
It's very similar. I think, you know, what it is I see someone who is very young usually. So, you know, they couldn't possibly have the amount of life experience that you would need to really be teaching something. And also when they start showing you an equation, if it was so great, why aren't you just doing that yourself and building a real business out of it?
Yep.
That to me is the telltale sign. Like, for example, like, you know, I teach people to sell, but I also sell myself, and also there's no, I doubt, I mean, like, obviously it's a different situation with me, right? Because I have, you know, decades of social proof and success stories. But the point is I see kids, they're like 22 and they're doing the Lamborghini, the house tour, and they all tell the same story. You know, my teachers told me I wouldn't amount to anything. My mother wanted me to be an engineer or to do this. They told me I should just get this dead end job, but I didn't. And you know, and look at me now, and I have a, right?
Yeah.
And I think though, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have a gift, by the way, but I think that's the first sign that you need to look a lot more closely at what they're saying and investigate more deeply what right. their reputation is and yep. so forth. Because I think a lot of these are really about separating people from their money.
Right.
It's that, and that's what I really liked about what you and Neil do. It's so exactly the opposite. Sometimes it's almost too much. Like, it's like you guys are so...
Yeah.
Like, no, seriously, it's very serious, high level.
Appreciate that.
Still, it's just really great stuff. And it's for me, it's why I called Neil recently when I had questions. I'll call Neil about marketing and stuff, because it's like the real McCoy. Do you think that the world is a worse place because of this whole thing, or a better place? Like, this whole, it's like, okay, I don't want to call it poison, but there's something about it that's a little bit poisonous, I think. Like,
oh, for sure.
You know, like, what do like,
it, like, it feels, you know what I mean? I'll tell you one thing.
Not right? Leo, tell me.
So, you know, it does feel to me the word is icky. But, you know, at the same time, they have some reflecting to do, I think. And I certainly had reflecting to do at that age. I think the one thing I'll tell you is I get the same feeling sometimes when I'm around certain affiliate marketers where it's just like money. I don't care if I'm going to screw people out. You've optimized too much for that KPI. You got to dial it back a little bit and balance it out with something else. That's what they say. And when you're running a business, you can't just give someone one KPI. You got to pair it with another metric.
So let's say you're one of these people that either is doing that or you want to do that. What's the better version of that? So I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think the idea would be is, you know, how do you come up with a really great biz op? Mm-hmm. That actually works, that's priced fairly, and that empowers people and disempowers people, versus disempowers people. You know, how do you do that? What do you think of like sort of the cornerstones of a great biz op?
I think, you know, bottoms, I think, look, we talked about training. We're used to training and teaching people. I think if you look at, maybe China's not a good example right now, but there's this teacher in China, and he has this podcast, and all he does is he teaches people, makes great money, $8 million a year. He takes home $8 million. And he just, it's bottoms up approach, right? Another guy, his name's Anthony Pompliano, and he's got a great podcast. He's got a newsletter, and he makes like $5 to $10 a month on the newsletter, charges money on his podcast subscription. He could offer stuff on the high end consulting. On the low end, he can have his newsletter subscription, which is like the hot thing right now in Silicon Valley. So I think, you know.
What's a newsletter?
So like a Substack. There's a company called Substack right now, and they are democratizing newsletter. It's like mini MailChimp, and you can charge people to subscribe to the newsletter. And so you charge like $5-$10 a month. That could be kind of your cash cow, right, for the vast majority of your audience. And then for the higher tier, maybe, for example, Neil and I, we have a, I hate using the word mastermind because that feels icky, right?
It's a shame, by the way, because it does.
Yeah.
It's become like, I have a mastermind. I do them like twice a year, and it's like 8 to 10 people, and it's
awesome.
What it's supposed to be, and you know, but I know
you can't say that word, so now it's like, do you say like junto or like a forum or peer group, like who knows? But so for the vast majority of our audience, Neil and I, we give away everything for free. Then we have, you know, we have a mastermind, we have a virtual mastermind because you can't do the live one right now,
right?
And then we have people that pay us for, you know, we don't like to do consulting too much because it eats our time, but we might do that from time to time. And then we have an advertising deal. But you just have different tiers, and then, you know, every year we'll send a survey monkey to the audience saying, we'll ask all this stuff, like, you know, what kind of role are you? Private equity, CEO, are you just a student, whatever? And then based off of that, like, what help do you need right now? What can we support you with? Then from there, we'll put forth, you know, new solutions, and we'll test things. So
what do you think the future is of marketing? Do you think it's going to continue to be this sort of Facebook, Instagram centric type of, you know, ad campaigns? Or do you think it's going to run its course and start to shift into something else?
I think, so who knows what the government's going to do to Facebook, Google, right? Who knows if they're going to break them up right now. But I think voice is the future. If you look at everything that's being done right now, your home speaker is listening to everything you say, for better or worse. And the behavior that you actually take on it. So I was talking to Neil about this yesterday. His baby is always like, you know, picking music to play, right? And so by default, Alexa now knows, oh, you probably have a baby in the house, and then I'm going to make baby suggestions to you. If you're Google, even better. If you're on YouTube, I'm going to throw those ads at you because I know you're more likely to convert there. So it all comes down to these. It's the same companies, I think. And it's just now you're playing a different the technology is catching up. So you're going to be seeing a lot more voice because just people are lazy and we're just sitting here, right? We're doing voice right now. And podcasting, as we've seen with the Joe Rogan deal, the $100 million plus deal, look, it's just proof in the pudding. So, and you do podcast ads too, so you know how it looks.
Sure. So, you know, it's funny. I did podcast ads and then I stopped doing them because I felt like that it was just corrupting my show a little bit. I had a company and they were a great company that was doing my podcast and, you know, they're great people, but I wasn't looking to really make money on my podcast as much. It was more like just to spread the word, top of the funnel sort of thing, you know, free info out there. And I found myself, I think that, like, you know, I always go back to this one scene from the movie Social Network, a great scene where they're having this argument. This is a really cornerstone issue for all entrepreneurs, especially in the space we're discussing. And that is, they're deciding if they should try to monetize Facebook and place these ads on it very early on. And Zuckerberg very adroitly says, you know, I'm sure it's a movie, so it's the best version of what he said. But what he's saying is, we don't even know what Facebook really is yet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to corrupt it, but the one thing it needs to always be is cool.
Yeah.
And if it's not cool, if we place these ads on for like Pizza Boy at the top, it's going to make it uncool. People won't want to go there. So you have to pick your spot when you want to monetize something. And I felt like with my podcast that I just started it and I was testing out all these different guests and, you know, what do people want to hear?
Yeah.
I tried funny people, business people, this, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, I'm trying to monetize it. And I'm like, I don't think that's even appropriate yet. And I was getting all these amazing advertisers because of my brand. And I said, you know what, stop. And I just finally added back on.
Yeah.
For example, I had, you know, Oracle NetSuite.
I saw that.
I love them because they're just a great, I mean, it's a fabulous company.
Yeah.
Great message to market match. And I'll probably add maybe one more. But so I thought it was like getting away from it. It's like, I'm like a store trying to make money. I tried to make the ads really funny.
Yeah.
Like I had
it's hard.
Yeah. And I was just trying to make, you know, make people laugh about them. So, but, so when do you think is like the sweet spot for monetizing?
I'll tell you what you could do. So I'm an advisor to this company called Supercast. And what they do is, it's kind of like Substack where they help you make little subscriptions, but this is becoming a hotter thing now too, where you can add. So for example, you might say, hey guys, this is, you know, the Jordan Belfort show. And, you know, by the way, this is like half of a private conversation I had with, I don't know, let's say Noah Kagan, because he had Noah Kagan on recently. So, you know, this is half of it, but you want to listen to the other half, go ahead and go to supercast.com/Jordan Belfort or whatever. You can subscribe. It's $5 a month and you get access to, like, you know, some of my courses or a back end or whatever. And you'll get these private conversations. I do like two of them and I might do a monthly Ask Me Anything. You can charge $5, $10, $15. And that is the go-between right there. Instead of saying, I'm going to read a bunch of ads for companies I don't care about.
Right.
So.
Interesting. So do you think for the average person starting a podcast, which I think is a great thing, by the way, I really like podcasts.
Everybody's starting one now.
Yeah, right. So it's like, you're just saying everyone's doing it. It's no barrier to entry, which is good and bad. I think the story that you told is a very common story. I started my podcast. I got 5 downloads and no one listened. Right. Yeah. And I kept trying and then, you know, it just didn't work. And eventually you cracked the code for it.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you think a new podcaster can do to try to really dramatically increase their listenership, you know, in the beginning? Yeah. If they don't have I was lucky I had a brand behind this, but what are you doing? You don't have that.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I were to be practical, you're starting out today. You don't have anything right now. Literally my producer on my team started a podcast on dating. Because he listened to us so much, he's literally just following the playbook. So you come out with 5 at a time. So it's like a, you know, there's predictability. He's doing a daily one right now because he knows daily is more consistency and it gets compound faster. So there's that. I think, you know, whatever you can do to get your, the problem right now is everyone's doing an interview podcast. So how do you zig where other people are zagging? So like with the Marketing School podcast, it's not an interview podcast. It's just Neil and myself, 5 to 10 minutes a day, boom, boom, boom. So what can you do differently? Depends on what you're doing, right? My producer's podcast is on dating. It's a daily dating podcast. And I actually think it's going to do well. And it's been starting to grow. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm only at like, you know, 30 downloads. I'm like, dude, you're 3 times higher than me in the first year. Right. And now he's getting even better. And it's just, it just takes time. And I just told him, I think you got to think about not the numbers first, not trying to make money. You got to think about your learnings, if you're getting any value from it. And enjoying, people say, you know, I used to think they're full of it when they're like, oh, you got to enjoy the process. You got to enjoy the journey. But the older you get, you realize, I think that's true. I don't know if it's the same for you.
Yeah, well, I think that, like, you know, someone says, should you monetize your passion or should you monetize what you're good at? And I believe you should monetize what you're good at. not necessarily your passion, because your passion might just not be monetizable. Yeah. But I think that it's great when your passion is monetized.
Where it intersects.
They intersect, right? But they don't always intersect. Yeah. I think that it's not a one-size-fits-all proposition. Yeah. And I also think that everybody has a different definition of monetary success. Like, I think we probably have higher standards than most people do. Right. So some people just, they don't really look at it that way. Their success could be measured in their own enjoyment of something. And
totally.
They, right.
Just everyone has their own definition. Yeah. I think there's this Japanese thing called Ikigai, and there's like a ton of Venn diagrams around it. And it's exactly what you're talking about. How do you find an intersection between all those things?
Yeah. So. And I think also, you know, so it's kind of the intersection of number one, what's your passion? Two, do you suck at your passion? I love playing tennis. I ain't no Roger Federer, right? Yeah, I'm not going to have a career on the tennis court, right? And then just also how you might be great at something, but it's really just not a very lucrative thing. It's, you know, for whatever reason, it's hard to deliver. Not a lot of people in that market. And then also, I think it's, you know, a lot of times, you know, you can, what I would say is almost find something that you don't hate for sure. Like, you don't want to be doing something that you dread. Mm-mm. Like, the day that I have that, the day I stop working, I never ever looked at myself as having to go to work since I was in my 20s. I always, you know, had things that were things that I cared about, and then I felt more alive when I was doing it versus not doing it.
It can't be a job. If you're going to start a podcast, or like, when you wake up in the morning and it feels like a job, you realize you're probably not doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. So. What do you think is the biggest break that you've had in your life? What was the pivotal moment for you? If you look back, you're very successful, you're young, all right? And you know, you're not that young, but I thought you looked like you're 12, okay? But you're not that young.
Yeah.
But no, what do you think is, like, in your, was there any moment you can look back in your 20s? Obviously, your relationship with Neil is a great thing, right?
Yeah.
Has Neil, you look at Neil as a mentor to you, or is more of a contemporary? I don't know.
I think, more of a contemporary, more of a, we learn from each other quite a bit.
Okay, fair enough. So that's a good answer. So, but who, do you have any moments, and it could just not be that mentor, not, but that, like, just changed your career, the course of it, how quickly you were achieving success? Did some things happen?
Yeah. You know, I don't have any crazy, like, Your stories are amazing, by the way. But I do remember when I was 25 or 26, I was leading marketing at this tech startup, and I was only a month into the gig, and the CEO pulls me aside and he's like, you know, if you don't hit numbers this month, we're gonna have to let you go because there's 80 people's families riding on your shoulders. I'm like 26, right? And I thought I'd freak out, but I didn't freak out. I was like, oh, let's go, let's do it. And I think at that moment, it's like, just like, man, if you just see things as like, this is a great challenge, let's do it. You just apply to everything else that you do, and it just keeps stacking. So I think once I took that mindset, I just applied it to, oh, the podcast is not doing well, right? 9 downloads. Let's go. Let's keep doing. So like, I think the more pain I feel, at least when it comes to like mental pain, I think the more excited I get. So at that moment, it should have been a crappy moment, but it was a motivational moment. So.
I am very much the same. I think that one of my ways of really motivating myself is moving away from painful thoughts. Like, if I feel like that this eventuality might happen, it would be so terrible, I will do anything to avoid that happening versus imagining a great outcome and just working towards that. I mean, I think most people use both, but I do have probably more of a pain-based motivation stretch than I probably liked, because it's not always the most joyful thing when you're going through it.
Yeah.
But I think more than that, I think one thing I've found in my own life, and I think that this is important for people to hear, and I'm guessing you're probably similar, is that, you know, people would say to me, wow, you're just so fearless the way you go about, like, you know, just start these businesses and just go ahead with it's like, you know, fear. And that's just not true. It's like, I have massive amounts of fear. Yeah. I just don't let it stop me.
The fear makes you do that.
I just don't let it, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I think there's a really important distinction in life, which you were touching on. That is that, you know, pain or fear is not necessarily a bad thing unless you make it a bad thing. You let it demotivate you versus, for me, when I'm feeling fearful, to me, that means I'm pushing the envelope of my comfort zone. And that means I have to work harder, focus more intently on something that it says, you know, hey, get excited right now. The stakes are high, it's fuel.
It's fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, though, what do you think, like, most people, though, tend to sort of, they sense that fear and they back off. Why do you think that is?
I think at least for me, I can only speak for myself. I think I cared too much about what people would say, right? Like, you know, you have your parents judging you, you have your friends judging you. It's like, oh, look at. And by the way, I did hear these conversations past. Look at Eric. What is he trying to do, right? And a lot of these people are, you know, they're working great 9-to-5 jobs, but, you know, people project their fears onto you, and then you start to feel like it's all about you and it's just about them. But then that causes you to get paralyzed. I think that's what tends to happen. And this is why I've always asked my dad, like, you know, I've asked my friend this before. I think he came up to me and he's like, I really want to start a business, man. I want to give you 5%. I was like, don't give me any percent. I'll help you. And I was like, why don't you just start it? And he's like, I don't think I can do it right now. It's too risky, right? It's, you know, my wife's starting something new. It's too risky. And I'm like, yeah, I pull his wife over. I was like, hey, can you start a business right now? You both might as well just take the risk at the same time. He's like, no, it's too risky. She's like, no, I fully support him. But it's really in your mind. Like, you care too much about all these things that are maybe not true. And then you realize, you just go for it. And then what's the worst that can happen? You learn a lot. So I think it's a mental reframe. And a lot of people don't understand mental models.
So I think that you're on something very, very important here. So you say, you know, what's the worst that can happen, right? I think every person that is about to make a decision always starts there. What's the worst that can happen? I think as human beings, we are fear-based creatures, and we always look at the downside and also the upside. We look at both. We look at both very quickly, almost simultaneously, and the brain works so fast and so automatic. It runs those parallel movies. Okay, if I put all the work in, if I take the risk, you know, just, you know, put my all into this, you know, what's my chances of success? What does that look like when I succeed? Conversely, what's my life look like if I fail, if it doesn't work out? And I think what happens with a lot of people, it's not so much that they're scared or they have a fear of failure as much as that when they play that movie out, the winning side, they don't really believe in their heart that they can succeed. They can't see themselves actually succeed. They don't, it's a lack of self-belief. See, when I am taking action, one thing I will tell you is I fully believe in my heart that if it's possible, I'll make it work. Yeah. Like, I have enough anchors, and I think you're probably the same. Like, you don't doubt your own ability to work through stuff, right? And I think that's where skills is so important, because it all comes down to confidence is based on skilling up.
Right.
The more skilled you are, the more you practice, the more confidence you have in your ability to execute, right?
Yeah.
So is that what you think, like, one of the secrets to why your training is so valuable and helps people, is because it makes them more confident in running that movie?
Totally. I'm sure this is the same thing. When you get DMs from people like, oh my God, like, I just got my first raise. We made our first 200 grand or whatever. And it's
constantly,
you can feel,
and
like,
I love them.
It's almost the like best a drug. Thing.
It's a drug.
I'm like, yes, every time, right?
Do you know that I had this conversation with John Maxwell?
Did you?
And I said to him, it's on video. I said, I'm having this issue. Like, I'm feeling greedy again.
Yeah.
And I used to think that there was, like, you know, greed is never good, but my greed is for, I want more DMs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he goes, that's called good greed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm greedy for other people's success stories from my stuff. And, like, because there's such a lift. It really does. It's like, it's hard to explain because you don't make any money from it, but it just makes you feel like so alive.
Well,
and
I would argue the money comes eventually.
Oh, yeah, it does. But, like, there's no direct monetary, like, yes, but it's more like, damn, you know, like, what I'm doing is so much value to people, and it makes you feel great inside. You know?
What did Zig Ziglar say, right? Related to John Maxwell, like, help people get what they want, you get whatever you want. Simple enough.
That was a book. So I first heard a take on that. It was a book I read back when I was 20. Oh my God, ready? I was 21 years old. I read a book called The 1 Minute Salesperson.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And it was a really good book. And I wonder if Zig got it from there, and maybe they got it from Zig.
Maybe they probably got it from
like the 1940s. Probably. Yeah. It's probably 50 years before when someone came up with it. But the book was based on, like, you know, I get what I want by helping other people get what they want.
Yeah.
The first thing I have to do is to walk in my customer's shoes. Mm-hmm. You understand? Like, this whole idea of, like, what really selling is all about. And I think marketing is very similar, right? Mm-hmm. In the sense, when you're actually, you know, figuring out your offers and your copy, are you doing that? Saying, well, what would my, you know, imagining yourself in the place of the customer?
Yeah. I mean, example, if you like, so for one of our things, I mean, we're deeply taking a look at, because here's the problem. If I'm creating a new offer and I'm just trying to blatantly drive ads to it, what people don't realize, I think a lot of beginning marketers don't realize, is that it's constantly an iteration game, right? You're looking at what your customers are saying. You got to get on the phone with your customers. I think a lot, like I used to think, oh, it's internet marketing. I can work in my boxers. I don't need to talk to anybody. But you, like with our software company, you have to be doing customer development. This is, read Steve Blank's book, right? Great book. Talk to people. And then from there, that's all their objections is going to go to your salesperson. You understand, like you got to answer people's objections, not only just in the sales conversations, but in the copy as well.
Sure.
And then you write really compelling copy that can speak to people. But what, you can't copy other people's copy because you're not feeling what emotionally, sure. Right? It's not the same thing. It's not, you haven't done the research that they've done. So you got to put in the work.
I remember this, just to that exact point, back in 2000, and I think it was 10 or 11, I was a speaker at Frank Kern.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a speaker at Frank Kern. She used to do these events along. I don't think he does them anymore. Yeah. But they were great events. And he's hysterical. He used to have these balls like, buy my shit in the back. He was like such a character, right? Yeah. Anyway, I got up on stage. I think it was about 900 internet marketers. This is in the early days.
Yeah.
This is even before like drop shipping. And stuff. Yeah. It was real dark. And I got up and said, you know, I said, the biggest mistake I think I see among people like yourself, I'm not saying it's you, but like a lot of internet marketers think, if I could just master the art of being an internet marketer, I'll never have to speak to another human being again.
Yep.
And they all started laughing hysterically because it's so, they're like, yeah, like, I'm like, and it's just not true.
Yeah.
All the great ones that are really doing well, they use that internet marketing to bring in the customers. Then they have conversations and whatever those conversations turn to, whether it's identifying for their needs, objections, up. So it's just, you know, and also cancellations, by the way. One of the biggest things I see, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you probably know this more than I do overall, but with a lot of these biz ops, they're running 30 and 40% cancellation rates. Like they were massive cancellation rates.
It's crazy. So I was talking to a guy, he has a SaaS company. We were at this internet marketing thing in Florida right before COVID went crazy here. And we're just talking like, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I have a buddy and he's so happy with his program. It's got like a 35% cancellation. I'm like, dude, in SaaS, like you can't do that because you're rolling over. You have to get a new set of customers every year. How are you supposed to compound your business?
And you're also pissing the hell off of your credit card processors and stuff like that.
They'll ban you.
So that's the double-edged sword of that formula you first mentioned. Like, you know, everyone's got this thing where they, you know, they show the, you know, they the ad of them walking through a house with the Ferrari, goes to a webinar, and then that webinar closes them. And I think a lot of the programs now are $2,000. It's like they're getting people to pay $2,000. But then they hit this, you know, 40, sometimes 50% cancellation rate. And it's worse than just the cancellation rate because, you know, if they're saying 50, it's 40, it's probably 50. Because everyone always, you know, under exaggerates their cancellations. But also there's a cost in keeping track of all that. Like there's, you know, even though you're not having a deliverable, so to speak, where there's returns, but still it's like, you know, whole customer service thing, right?
I think it demoralizes your team too. Like if you've got a good team, like they want to be working on something that motivates them. It's like, oh yeah, I work on this thing that has a 50 to 60% cancellation rate.
So what would you do? So if you're a guy, what would you do if you're someone that has a webinar like that or anything where you're just seeing an enormous amount of returns? What do you do? Do you change your approach? What do you do there?
I'll tell you one thing. We have this one copywriter. We use a sales software called Gong, G-O-N-G. It's great. And it transcribes all the calls. You can see how often people are talking, whatever. And you know, he just listened to a lot of the calls, whether it's sales calls or even the coaching calls that the coaches were on. And what he was looking for was, you know, why did people sign up for the program? What problem were they trying to solve? What has the program done for them so far, right? And, you know, from there, they're able to, okay, he compiled everything into this Excel document and he sends it over and he's like, okay, these are the issues that we need to fix right now because, you know, they're not getting enough support here, or they would like more phone calls here, or they would like a one-on-one coaching thing or whatever, right? So there's all these little things, and what you're ultimately looking for there through a sea of feedback is you're looking for the signal. What's constantly getting repeated over and over and over? And there's a lot of noise, but look for the signal, and then you can make optimizations. You're constantly tweaking your thing. So then you can bring the refund rate down from 50% to 45% to 40%, 35%. Dude, one guy just recently, the CEO called me, Because I tried to sign up for this health, it's like a health patch, and you know, measures, you know, all this stuff around you, tells you if your glucose is spiking or whatever. And he calls me, it's the CEO. I'm like, why are you doing these calls right now? You're doing a lot of customer development. And he's like, yeah, I've done 600 of these calls, and I'm going to do like 400 more. And I'm like, that's a badass right there. That's what it takes to build an amazing product.
So what do you think for you, and do you do stuff with Neil and separately, or everything together?
Yep. So we do things together. We have competing agencies, but we don't operate in a day to day. So we just have fun doing our own thing. Like whatever we talk about, we have a blast. So
what's the future for you in terms of where you think your business goes in the next 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I think so. One thing I'm excited about, the only reason I kept my ad agency, so I bought, this is a failing company I bought, and you know, I'm excited about the future of marketing agencies, right? I think traditional agencies don't work. It's got to be paid for performance. So I got one buddy, his company does about $26-30 million a year. He's only got 10 employees, great revenue per employee and super efficient business. Another guy, 25 million a year, 25 employees. Another guy, $500 million a year, 300 employees. So this is much better than saying, oh, I want to build an agency that's like Omnicom or Publicis, these big agencies, holding companies, where they're just playing the same game. They're just buying other agencies. They have thousands and thousands of employees. COVID hits, they have a layoff, like a bunch of them. I think, you know, that's what I'm excited about for the agency. I'm focused on my software company right now. And then I think ultimately, I think we're probably similar. I just like training, and I just like teaching people. Like that's my foundation right there. Like when I teach, you know, local colleges here, or I teach online, the dopamine hits you get from people emailing you or DMing you, I just want to keep doing that. So I keep feeling good about myself. So
one of the things I recently did is I pivoted my business. I actually went back a step in the value chain of salespeople. So for many years I was training salespeople. I noticed that I was going to all these companies and I was finding that there was this huge attrition rate, and it was being caused by poor first year job performance and also the wrong people being hired. And I'm the guy that was being called in to fix it, right? So what I did is I said, you know what, I'm going to go back a step. Rather than just training salespeople, let me actually source them, recruit them myself, train them, and then deliver them to companies. So I sort of went to the recruiting side of sales. It's been a very, very great, it's been a great move for me.
I think what you're doing is really important, because there's only one other person I know that's doing it. And I'm just, when they said it, I was like, oh, duh, like, sign me up, you know?
And what do you think about that with marketing? I mean, like with companies that are out there recruiting people in the marketing department, how many people do you show up for marketing jobs and don't really know the real deal of marketing?
You know what's crazy? So on the other podcast I do is an interview podcast. So I always ask at the end, which you're going to be on that one, but at the very end, it's like, how can I help? Every single time without fail, okay, fine, 80% of the time, I need a marketer. Need a marketer, right? And so what we're trying to do with Marketing School right now is very similar to this company called Lambda School, and they do an income share agreement.
Yeah.
And so we're like, why can't we just do that for marketing? We have the audience, plug it in, right? I just said audience first, plug the business model in, should be good to go.
So I started that. That's how I started. So so I'll tell you the problem with that, just so you know, with Lambda, is that there are these with income sharing arrangements, and I know everything about them. I was this close to launching one, and I backed off at the government does not like them. They despise them, and they go after companies. Lambda got shut down once or twice. Other companies have gotten permanently shut down. Education's a very strange thing. So
you know what makes sense a lot now with COVID and everything? It's maybe, this is just a hypothesis, that Lambda School might be infringing on taking government. Like, if you're taking that away, you're competing with the government. They don't like that, because that's their money.
It goes to further. It's universities, traditional education.
Yep.
There's a huge lobby in there. You know, when you start talking about, you know, replacing the traditional education system, because that's, you know, what Lambda's really based on. It's this idea that the student loan system is broken. It's a broken model.
Yep.
And that, you know, and theoretically, if you look at what Lambda is doing, it makes incredible sense. Like, I looked at it, I was really intrigued. Like, it's a much better way. What they do is they take people, and if you want to become a coder, you go through this boot camp, but they don't charge you anything for it.
Right.
But you sign what's called an ISA, an income sharing arrangement and agreement. And after you get employed and you're making over a certain amount of money, you pay them back over a period of 3 to 5 years, whatever it might be. And you might pay 25 or 30 grand. And that would seem like, wow, it's a win-win. I mean, you're deferring. There's no, if you don't get a job, they don't get paid back. Yeah. Right.
It's right in front of us.
But somehow, you know, that got twisted into like this. If you read about this stuff, there's mm-hmm. incredible amount of bad press and fraud and scams.
Oh yeah.
So I shied away from it because mm-hmm. it was a shame because I really thought it was a really elegant model yep. and a better mousetrap, so to speak, for how do you like sort of, you know, give people the education they so desperately need, yep. but not saddle them with student loans.
And I think the key thing, though, I think yeah. you could make it work if it all depends on the marketing and the messaging around it, right? Like, yes, you can pay this, or you have the income share, and you don't, because Lambda blatantly in their marketing, they were going after, they're saying, hey, we're coming after the traditional education system. Yeah. But if you lead with the other part first and say, hey, you have an option.
Part of it was that the way ISAs work is there's no actual, they don't say the cost of the education is X, a lot of them. So it's not like, so they weren't putting a price on the education. Mm-hmm. And also, and where a lot of them got in trouble is they then attacked them saying, okay, you're not a licensed educator. That's what Lambda got shut down for, was not being a licensed educator in the state of yep. California. There's a law in California that you can't charge. This is crazy.
Yeah.
If this, you can't charge more than $2,500 for a course, but everyone does.
That's crazy.
Everyone does. So, yeah. so like any seminar that's over $2,500 yeah. is illegal in California. But they don't enforce it. But they enforce it because of the student loan. You get it? So like, so anyway, but I think you're right. And that was part of what inspired me to do what I'm doing. And then I realized, I said, you know what? I'm just gonna bring the price way down. Yeah. I said, I don't need to like, I looked and said, okay, so they're charging $15,000. I said, you know what? Let me bring my education down way, way down. I lowered yeah. the price of the education. So it was just enough that I want to make sure the student is invested. They have to pay money.
Right.
Because they don't pay money, you know what happens. They don't yep. care. They don't care. So I charge, you know, so the total fee they pay with me to go through a full boot camp and training and coaching is $2,500.
Right. It's a good price. Yeah.
No, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like yeah. not even fair. It's not yeah. a getting the deal, but,
yeah.
and they make a pay, they pay it over months, you know, yeah. after they're already working.
Even better, yeah.
Right, but what it does though, is people say, well, I don't want to pay that. Great, I'm not interested. I'm not finding you a job. It's like, if you're not willing to invest a few thousand dollars yeah. in yourself to yeah. learn a life-changing skill, that's why I think Lambda also is good, because it weeds out people that are not willing to invest in themselves.
You know what's interesting, Jordan? I think what you could do is there's going to be the reckoning is coming for all these colleges. Look, a lot of Michigan's football program drives, what, $161 million of their revenue? So guess what? I think a lot of these colleges are going to have to go up for sale. Like, you see everything else being bought right now. So
what do you make of this whole COVID thing? I mean, what do you think? I mean, listen, obviously there's a virus, yeah. right? Do you think that people at this point are just, I wouldn't say overreact, but like that there's a cost yeah. to things on the other side yeah. of emotional damage, yeah. whether it's in suicides, failed yeah. marriages, child abuse, malnutrition, mm-hmm. when people drop below the poverty line, mortality yeah. rates, you know, rise significantly. Do you think this was that, A, it was a mistake, the original lockdown, and more importantly, whatever, because hindsight's 2020, but now knowing what we know, what do you think should be done? Like, do you think we're doing yep. the right thing or the wrong thing?
I think Americans are over it. That's the first thing I think. I think no matter what happens, numbers or whatever, I think they're over it. I think, this is my opinion, the best thing right now would be to have the people that are at risk, whether they have comorbidities or however you pronounce it.
All obese, comorbidities, yeah. immunocompromised.
Yeah, they stay at home, they stay safe, right? And then you put the people that can go to work, they go to work. And that's what you got to do right now to be safe. I'm not sure about school so much because, you know, that's a little...
Let's bring this to another level now.
Yeah.
So you just said the fucking obvious,
yeah.
which is what every smart person is saying. I've been saying this since the beginning, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been a really vocal
yeah.
of like, let's take the older people that are in danger. Let's give them filet mignon and lobster tails.
Yeah.
With all the money that was lost
yeah.
from this economic upheaval.
We could have
taken all that money and yeah. given it to those people who really need to be protected. But
yeah.
here's my point. What you just said is obviously very smart, sober, and it's not a non-humanistic answer. Like, I don't care if people, you're not saying that at all, okay? Yeah. And I had, Dan Crenshaw, representative from Texas on mm-hmm. the show recently. Brilliant guy. He said that. Tommy Lern. I mean, all the people ask us, they all say the same thing.
Yeah.
I agree. You will. Why? What is, do you think is the reason? Is it
yeah.
just to try to bring down the Trump presidency? Is that part of it? Is it, I mean, what do you really think is going on here at this point? Whether you hate Trump or love Trump, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't add up anymore.
I think, you know, what Charlie Munger said, like, show me an incentive and I'll show you the outcome. So, look, you use this virus, no matter what side you're on right now, you're going to use it to further whatever your agenda is. And I'm not a political person, by the way. I'm just observing right now. And then you also observe how people are behaving. The vast majority of people are going to behave a certain way. You're going to see people saying things such as billionaires shouldn't exist, which is crazy. And so there's just a lot of stuff going on. You know, people are feeling divided and it's just, it's crazy. So, but what's great, the other thing you're saying, by the way, all your friends are saying this, all the people you're talking to are saying, you know, people should go back to work. By the way, these are all motivated people that have built teams, they've built companies, they've accomplished things. And I'm not saying they're better than anybody, but I'm saying I think they have some experience that a lot of people might not necessarily have.
Clearly, if you create a situation, let's talk about unintended consequences, or show me an incentive, I'll show you an outcome. If you're going to pay people an extra slush fund of $400 on top of their normal pay, and they can make more money from staying home than from going back to work, people are going to stay home.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. So I guess Trump now had to extend because he's just trying to win an election at this point. So it's, but it just seems like just utter ridiculousness.
Yeah, people don't think about the second order, third order consequences. I think for most people, there's this really good blog, Farnham Street. Just read about these mental models and you'll understand how people behave and you'll understand how to think longer term, and which applies to business and success as well.
What's your advice for young 20 to 30, you know, up and coming, not just this international, just success-oriented person, what do you think they should be doing right now? Like, but you know, in just terms of their, whatever they do for a living, you know, what are the moves that you should be making right now to succeed and just get yourself ahead of the rest of the pack? What are those things?
I think the people that are truly successful during this period of time are actually, yes, they feel bad about the bad stuff going on, but they're deep down inside, they're motivated. They're like, it's let's go again. And, you know, some of the entrepreneurs I talk to, it's like, they don't brag about their success right now. It's what they're like, dude, my business is up like a lot and I'm just going to keep working hard. So I think right now it's like, if you don't know anything, you don't have any experience right now. Let's say you're graduating from college. Okay. You didn't get to go to your graduation ceremony this year. What you do, what I did in the beginning was I read so much and I read a lot. I learned a lot. I listened to podcasts such as this one and I reached out to people that I admired. And let's say I want to work for Jordan Belfort. I want to learn sales more. I'm going to DM him. I know what he's interested in. I'm going to say, hey, I spotted these three things over here. I would like to help you for free. And if it works out well, boom, I'm negotiating, by the way, you're going to respect that. Hey, you know what? In a month, if it goes well, you know, let's do something for the long term. And like 80, 90% of the time people do that to me, it works and I respect them more. And without fail, 100% of them have gone on to do amazing things. And I still talk to these people because I love them because they're driven and they want to make an impact.
Got it. Well, I got to say, I'm impressed. What's the best place for people to find more things about you? Like, is it your podcast, website? Where do they find you?
Yeah, you can just go to levelingup.com or you can listen to the Leveling Up podcast or you can listen to the Marketing School podcast.
All right, buddy. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on. You're amazing. And when am I coming on your podcast? Soon, right?
Yeah, soon.
I love it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, guys. Take care of the great episode of The Wolf's Den. Make sure you share this with your friends. This is information that everybody needs to hear, listen to, and act upon. All right, here's the deal. As America gets back to work, you want and need every possible advantage out there to succeed in the new economy. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud-based business system. So receive your free guide right now at netsuite.com/wolf. That is netsuite.com/wolf. All right, real quick, listen, if you're a CEO, you're a sales manager, or you're involved in hiring for your company, I want you to check out my new organization, Straight Line Hiring. What we do is we deliver expertly trained salespeople to companies like yours. World-class salespeople trained by me and delivered to you on demand. Go to my website, jordanbelfort.com. Check out Straight Line Hiring, the only way to grow your company with certainty.